All right, this is great. We got a full house here, and this is wonderful. So thank you. And thank you for your patience. It's a little after 7 o'clock, and I'll call the board meeting to order. If I can ask the clerk to please take the roll call.
Trustee Bachner?
Here.
Trustee Gillis?
Here.
Trustee Vasquez?
Here.
Trustee Brennan?
Here.
Trustee Johnson?
Here.
Trustee O'Connell?
Here.
President Ducey?
Here. Okay, very good. If I can ask everyone to stand to say the Pledge of Allegiance, please.
Pledge of Allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America, to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Okay. Hey, Bob, do we have any citizens' comments up there? I mean, I know I've got two here. I just want to make sure there's none that are – we don't have a thing. Okay, very good. There's two, right? Yep, Megan and John. So, Megan, you want to – yep, come up to the point? Great, thanks.
Welcome to our new clerk and board members. Thank you for taking on this role in our community. My name is Megan Cascatello, and I live at 8125 Lake Street. I'm here to comment on item 5D, the railway merger item. For those of you who know me, you know that this is a key concern of mine in the community. I'm one of the founders of the River Forest Rail Traffic Pollution Protection Group here, and I've worked with President Ducey and my neighbors over the last several years, along with village staff. And I'm really pleased with the success we've had working with the railroads during that time. I so appreciate the effort that has gone into being proactive about the potential merger between Canadian National and Kansas City Southern Railway. I appreciate the time that Lisa, Kathy, and the Metropolitan Mayors and our staff have put into looking at the issue. I commend both the resolution and the timeliness of this resolution. So thank you for thinking about the safety of our community. Beyond the adoption of the resolution, I would urge several things, the most important being community outreach and communication campaigns. In my neighborhood, we were startled by a change that the railroad made, and it created a lot of upset. We have an opportunity to get out in front of this one, and I'd really like to see that. I'm sure that residents are concerned, or will be concerned, especially those living near the Canadian National tracks. We currently use Canadian National tracks for recreation, which is fine as long as there are no trains on them. But if we're going to see an increase in traffic, we might also see an increase in risk. Not to mention the repeated truck versus bridge collisions that we see in Chicago. Without advanced and repeat notice, this will create a huge safety hazard. We have four at-grade intersections between Division and Chicago, and those intersections are at oblique angles to the tracks, and they lack pedestrian arm signals, which means that both pedestrians and cars will have to look behind them in order to see an oncoming train if the signals are malfunctioning or they're not paying attention. These tracks pass very near to homes, and residents who live there will be startled by a sudden increasing noise if we aren't communicating appropriately early on. As a resident that's impacted by railroad issues, I know having time to organize and having time to address the issues is a key to my happiness. Raising resident awareness will help us improve safety and reduce the chances of another River Forest rail fatality, like the one behind my home in 2010. If this merger does come to pass, I encourage us to seek grant funding for upgrading signals and the additional policing burden that would come from train traffic, as well as educating the village and its youth. I encourage our village to team with our schools to emphasize National Rail Safety Week, which is September 22nd to 26th, to educate our students about railroad safety. Operation Lifesaver has lesson plans for kids and community communication pieces that we can use to educate our community about the added rail traffic. Again, I thank you so much for this early, for addressing this early, and I urge you proactively to reach out to residents to make sure that any changes to the Canadian National Line are known about well before they take effect. This will minimize potential loss of life and allow residents living close to the track time to organize and adjust to any new challenges that they may face. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Megan. And I agree that we need to make sure we stay in front of this. So I don't know what specifically we can do, but I think I'd ask Lisa and Greg if we can make sure we do stay on top of it. I mean, because I know there's been a lot of discussion that the merger will not happen. I guess it's been in the newspaper, but I could be wrong on that. So we just need to stay on top of it, as you mentioned, and, you know, getting the residents involved. So I'll ask the both of you guys if you would help us make sure that we do that.
Sure.
Thank you. Thank you, Megan. Yeah. Okay, John Grant. I don't know if John is on Zoom here. I will look for him. Oh, I'm sorry, John. Didn't see you. Welcome.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yes, my name is John Grant, River Forest resident. First, I also want to say congratulations to all of the elected officials who just won elections. Congratulations. Good job.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
And thanks to all of you for dedicating your time and energy to serve the village. I also want to say, or I also want to voice support for LGBTQ plus Pride Month in River Forest.
Yay.
And thank Erica Bachner and others who worked on that. My main piece of business is about the review of the handling of the advisory bodies that report to the village board. But before I make my comments, I want to say that my comments tonight have nothing at all to do with the appointment on the agenda tonight of Eric Simon as sustainability chair. Although I can't pass on the opportunity to say that Eric is a neighbor and a friend of mine, and I think he's a great guy and has worked for issues of sustainability for many years here and in Colorado, and I'm happy to see him appointed to that role. I also said this before, I want to stress that my comments about the village board's handling of advisory bodies is about flaws with the system, not with the people. And I also want to thank the board for putting this on the agenda for the meeting for February 22nd and for scheduling a public meeting June 2nd. So I just want to make two quick comments about the issue. First, I want to note, especially to the new board members, that when this issue was placed on that February agenda, the call for reform received a huge show of support from the community. 20 residents wrote in to voice support for reform, and others made public comments at the board meeting. Second, very simply, I hope the board will be formal and deliberate about how it goes about reviewing and improving the way it manages the advisory bodies. I'm pleased that a public meeting has been set for June 2nd. What is not clear to me is if this is the only plan of action for this topic, or if this is part of a much larger plan to research the topic and create new policies and procedures. It's not clear if this will be the only meeting. It's also not clear what will be done with any information gathered from this meeting. I ask the board to be very clear about what its intentions are with this topic. And I would love to see the board memorialize its clear intentions by coming up with a written plan of action, and for the end result of that action plan to be a new ordinance which sets clear and detailed policies and procedures. I have created my own version of an action plan that I humbly submit to the board. I will submit a PDF of my prepared comments tonight, as well as this action plan to Sarah Pfeiffer, and I ask that these be attached to the written record. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, John. Yep, and I think, to address it, I think Lisa is looking to have a couple of resident meetings. I know there's several residents that are interested in this, like you are, John. I know Jan Sager has been doing a lot of research. So, yeah, the intent is to come up with a nice policy, and a document that we can put up on the our website and share with our residents. So that's the goal. meanwhile, we've got people we have to put on different boards and commissions. So the documents can be important for them to have it for their use. So thanks, John. All right, so we'll move on with any elected official comments and announcements. So we'll start with Erica.
Phyllis.
Thank you.
Oh, I'm sorry. We didn't have Phyllis on our list.
Oh, she's waiting.
Okay.
Again, I respond the way it says on the village website, and this is the second time you, I guess, have not gotten my request to comment. So I don't know what's going on there.
I don't know, but don't worry. We are easy group, so go ahead, Phyllis.
Okay. Let me get up my little thing. So now, and I'm prepared for you, forgotten it, for you to miss me. I wanted last time to thank you for, I asked to, that if somebody has spoken to the board on an issue to be informed when you're going to talk about it again. I have now gotten twice an email from the village saying you're going to have a board meeting, which is very, very nice. I appreciate that because in case I forget, it reminds me. So thank you. I'm talking about the Lake and Lathrop building. As you know, I live at 411 Ashland Avenue, just southwind of the building. And, you know, I want to say that we want an attractive, appealing building on that site. So certainly having nothing there is an eyesore. And we want it to be wonderful so that it'll bring in wonderful residents and wonderful businesses. And while we're not looking forward to the noise and dust, we are looking forward to seeing the vertical construction start in August, as said. We really wish the development company well. You have taught me very well to look at the village website to look for updates on this project. There has been no May update. What it says is come to the village board meeting. So here I am. It also has been no change of the number of units sold. So that's my first question is about the, if that's changed at all. And then last month, when I asked if there was any family that are part of the current six sales, the answer was no immediate family. So what about more distant family? That would be one question I have. So that's question number two. Also, there's a question about the cleanup. Yes, the cleanup is done, but then you talked about the gases that are going to be emitting from the ground, and that you have to put a barrier in and venting. So I don't think that was explained enough. I guess I'm really concerned about that. What does it mean to have a barrier? And where will the venting be vented to? We are downwind from your building. And what are the gases? Is radon part of this? We need to know that. Next question. Are the zoning permits complete or in process? Now, I know that's on the website too, but really, I'm not used to looking at permits, and I don't know what permits still might need to be obtained. So if we could have an update on that. And a lot of these questions are for people in my building. The other little point is when I ask about the Lake and Lathrop building in the past, the board always says that the project is not out of compliance. I'm sure that's true because the arrangement at the moment says that it will be completed in November 2021. Clearly, as they told us last month, it will not be completed in November 2021. It'll be completed 18 months from August. So I'm taking that means that they're going to be asking for another extension. And I guess it's up to the board whether you grant it. And so I'm curious about how many extensions buildings usually get. I have no experience in this at all. I completely understand that it's an incredibly complex situation to have to build a development. And you had to clean up the site and you also had COVID. So I'm sure that affected the timeline. But still, I'm curious, like the Sheridan, how many extensions did they get? So that's another question. Next question. And this comes from somebody, one of my neighbors. Does the current inflated prices of building materials affect the pricing of past and future sales. I would think it wouldn't affect the pricing of past sales. It'll affect the pricing of future sales. So what she's asking is, would that affect potential buyers given that 6 units will have been sold at a lower price? She's aware that all this building materials have really gone up in price. So that's another question. And I have one other question, assuming the buildings, the start, what time in the morning are the construction people supposed to be starting? Because I was awakened sometime in the last month at 6:15 with noises outside. And I don't know who it was, but I hope that they're not able to start at 6 o'clock in the morning. Okay, thanks very much. Those are all my questions.
Okay, thanks. Thanks, Phyllis. Most of these I think will get answered, I think, as far as the website.
We'll update it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, ma'am.
We're looking forward to the update as well.
So we'll get that updated even after tonight's update. So we'll have that for you first thing in the morning with your cup of coffee. And then I think a lot of these other questions I think we can answer during the update. So hang with us. Okay. Then I will go to Trustee Bachner.
Thank you. I'd like to start with a land acknowledgement. So as we begin, we are mindful that we hold these meetings on land that was once and still inhabited by Indigenous people, including the Ojibwa, the Chippewa, the Menominee, Potawatomi Nations, and more. We will remember our nation's history and honor the Native people as stewards of this land that was colonized, and that River Forest continues to be a place many people from diverse backgrounds live and gather. It feels like first day of school vibes here. Coming in, taking photos, putting on some nice clothes. So it's wonderful to see everyone here today and wonderful to be with the rest of the trustee group. I first want to congratulate the Roosevelt Band and Orchestra for both receiving first place superior ratings at the Trills and Thrills Music Festival. This comes from the River Forest Facebook site for parents. So Genevieve Jones, thank you for this information. And thank you to Mr. Hoffness and Ms. Minish for everything that they do for the students. I've had a child that was in band and it is just a wonderful program. So for people who are considering doing it, please do it. It is really great. In the past week, I also at Roosevelt Middle School was able to volunteer for the COVID vaccinations for the kids ages 12 and over. There were a lot of kids who were really excited. My child was a little bit nervous, and the nurses were absolutely wonderful. Kids were coming in saying, "Happy Vaccine Day," and so I took that on and started saying that with to everybody who came in as well. And so we were able to get over 160 kids vaccinated that day, and then there will be a second shot in early June for them to come back. So thank you to Jewel Osco. Thank you to everybody who is a part of that, to District 90 for doing that. And if your child is over, is 12 or over, please consider getting the vaccine for them. Lots of different places available to do that. And I think that might be it for my comments.
Thank you, Trustee Bachner. Trustee Gillis.
Hello. Am I on?
You on?
Am I on now?
No.
Nope. Try one more time. There you go.
The red line.
Pull it in. I know, but it's not. Okay, now I'm on. Okay. Right? Mm-hmm. Hello. This is my first time doing this, so I'll try to be brief. I mean, over the past month, I've been getting ready to transition my responsibilities as chair of the Sustainability Commission to Eric Simon, who was also my neighbor and has been doing a great job. So I'm looking forward to making that appointment as one of my first duties. I want to then let everybody, wish everybody a happy Memorial Day weekend. It'll be here before you know it. And I actually learned some information about Memorial Day that I thought I would share with you. So I had no idea that it is an American holiday observed on the last Monday of May, honoring the men and women who died while serving in the U.S. military. Memorial Day this year is on Monday the 31st. Originally known as Decoration Day, it originated in the years following the Civil War and became an official federal holiday in 1971. So that not that long ago. I was alive. So we all observe Memorial Day in different ways. Many of us do visit cemeteries or memorials to honor our loved ones or those that have served, holding family gatherings and participating in parades. Unfortunately, we will not have a parade this year, but we will next year. So, you know, that'll be good. And it does unofficially mark the beginning of the summer season. I ask that all River Forest residents keep the intent of the holiday in mind as we're getting together with family now that many of us are vaccinated and are able to gather with those who are also vaccinated. Enjoy the first weekend of summer, and thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Trustee Gillis, okay. Trustee Vasquez.
Thank you. Good evening, everyone. It's good to see everybody. I just have two items. I also want to join Trustee Gillis in wishing everybody a safe and healthy Memorial Day weekend. And I want to thank all individuals who are serving our country and who have served our country. Thank you all, and the families too of all of our for all of the respective people who have served our country as well. So, also second, then I do want to wish everyone a happy Pride Month, for particularly noting our LGBTQ community for the month of June. I'm happy to. Being one who is going to support the resolution that's on the agenda for today. So, thank you.
Very good. Thank you. Clerk Keller? I kept on missing Kathleen, so I'm going to do better this term.
Thank you. I'm grateful to be here, and I'm looking forward to serving the community. Thank
good.
You.
Thank you, John. Trustee Brennan.
Thanks. This is the first time I've been here in person for about a year and a quarter, and it feels both surreal and strangely normal.
Yeah.
So I have two things. First, earlier this month, I attended by Zoom a Metropolitan Mayor's Caucus Diversity Task Force meeting. And at this meeting, or before this meeting, the staff was directed to do research into which municipalities around the which are members of the MMC have advisory groups or task forces or commissions or committees dealing with DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion issues. And so there's some interesting information. I don't have my full notes with me tonight, but I quickly jotted a few things down. One is that they identified there are 175 municipalities that have set groups working on DEI issues, but they only looked at those that have something on the website. So there are probably more than that, like us. We probably don't have anything on our website yet or a page from our equity advisory group. But anyway, it's nice to know that there are 175 that are, you know, established like that. Six of them spoke and gave information about the work that they've been doing, gave suggestions and recommendations, and talked about their challenges. The Metropolitan Mayor's Caucus is going to continue research and discussion on this topic. They now have a tab on their website with lots of information, including some information about structures and that we had looked at for River Forest's advisory group. So it will be helpful for our advisory group and members to have this other these other resources to rely on.
Yeah. Good.
And the second thing, I wanted to make a plug for our curbside composting. And specifically, one of our residents who lives in a multifamily building reached out to me this month and told me how much her building is enjoying sharing a compost subscription. Mm. I think there are between 15 to 20 units in this building. They have one subscription that those of them that want to do it share the cost of, and they're thoroughly enjoying it, and she wanted to publicize to others who are in multifamily buildings that you can do it. And here's how you do it. You go to the Village of River Forest website, you do a search for curbside composting, or go to the sustainability page. You can get it through that page also. And then you fill out this, there's a link for a service request and that takes you, I think it's a service request that goes to our waste hauler. So that's how you do it. Thank you.
All right. So get all of our composting out, the composting delivered. Did we get all of it delivered? All right. Pretty good. Curbside compost, right? Remember? We delivered it, so it's good. Trustee Johnson?
Okay, I just want to say welcome to everyone in the audience as well as on Zoom. It's my second meeting. I'm very excited to be here. I do want to wish everyone a happy upcoming holiday, and I hope you enjoy it. I would encourage all the residents to review the village website on new summer activities, such as the block party issues and compliance issues, so that we can all stay in compliance as we enter the summer. Lastly, I was fortunate enough to be elected on the DEI committee to serve with Trustee Bachner and Lisa, and I'm looking forward to that and wanted to know we had an initial meeting and we expect to be reaching out to everyone very soon. Mm-hmm. And that's all. Thank
Great.
You.
All right. Super. Thanks, Trustee O'Connell.
I got a couple of things. First of all, as was mentioned, we will not be having our Memorial Day parade this year. The Park District will be hosting a ceremony at the Memorial Parkway at Lake and Lathrop on the northeast corner. Again, it's 10 a.m. on Monday morning for those who are interested. It'll be a nice ceremony. And secondly, on Friday, I had the opportunity with President Ducey, Chairman of the EDC, Lee Newbecker, and Commissioner Bob Graham to tour the Sheridan. And I tell you, I was wowed by what was going on over there. First of all, the building is absolutely spectacular. Yeah. I mean, it was beautiful. The staff was, you know, they're still kind of gearing up. They had 9 residents. They were expecting their 10th that evening. Of the residents that were living there, I think 9 of them at the time have children that are living in River Forest. So that's a tribute to, again, aging in place and having our parents be close by. But, I mean, it's a first-class operation, and I was so happy to have an opportunity to go through it and just wish them nothing but great success over there. So that's all I got.
Okay. Great. Thanks, Bob. I'll just echo what he said regarding the Memorial Day Parade, and I thank Bob for giving details, because although we're not having a parade, we are going to have a ceremony, and we certainly will honor those that served us. And we have our webpage, our front webpage has all the names of all those that served and is continuing to serve our country from River Forest. So we're very proud. Again, echoing what Bob said regarding the Sheridan, it is first class. I'm sorry that I missed the ribbon cutting, but they are here to help our community in any way. And I highly recommend, if you haven't gone over there, residents, trustees, please take a look. I think you'd be extremely proud of the fact that this is a first-rate building and a first-rate operation. And I'm even more excited about the fact that, as Bob mentioned, the majority, if not all of them, are coming from River Forest, although, you know, they come from anywhere. But it just continues to reinforce the need to find suitable housing for our folks that are beginning to age in place and want to stay in River Forest and close to their families. So I think that's a great success. The only thing I want to also announce is you guys just got, inducted to being a trustee, but we're going into our summer month. And so we typically go to one meeting a month just because people take holidays and travel and so forth. And I'm thinking that you all are going to start traveling. So the proposed holiday schedule for the 3 months in the summer would be June 28th, July 12th, and August 9th. If for any reason those don't work for any of these trustees, you know, again, we're going to continue to do Zoom so long as Governor Pritzker has allowed it under his executive order. And if you're traveling for business, you can also always call in telephonically, which is suitable. I mean, we just have to approve you, but we've done that in the past, and we will continue to honor those that travel for work. So please take a note of that, and if you, anybody, like I said, has any big issues, we'll work around them. Okay, that's all I have. So let's move on to the resolution designating the month of June as LGBTQ plus Pride Month. We can read the resolution, Erica, if you'd like, or we can, where's the action form?
Sure.
Well, I want to find my, here. We sure do. So I'd like a motion and then a second, and then I'll ask Trustee Bachner to read the resolution.
Sure. I motion to approve a resolution designating the month of June as LGBTQ plus Pride Month.
Second.
Okay. Did you do our audit? Thanks.
A resolution designating the month of June as LGBTQ Pride Month. Whereas the Village of River Forest supports the rights of every citizen to experience equality and freedom from discrimination, and whereas all people, regardless of age, gender, identity, race, color, religion, marital status, national origin, sexual orientation, or physical challenges, have the right to be treated on the basis of their intrinsic value as human beings, and whereas the Village of River Forest accepts and welcomes people of diverse backgrounds and believes a diverse population leads to a more vibrant community, and whereas the lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and queer communities contribute to the cultural, civic, and economic successes of the Village of River Forest, and whereas while we as a society at large are slowly embracing new definitions of sexuality and gender, we must also acknowledge that the need for more education and awareness remains vital to end discrimination and prejudice, and whereas we encourage our residents to reflect on the ongoing struggle for equity, equality members of the LGBTQ plus community faith and celebrate the contributions that enhance our village. And now for their be it resolved, the village president and the board of trustees hereby recognize the month of June and commemorate, honor, and indicate support for LGBTQ plus Pride Month as an expression of such commemoration and honor, and to demonstrate the village's support for LGBTQ plus pride, village staff are directed to fly the rainbow flag immediately below the village, the River Forest flag on the village flagpole outside the village hall for a 4-week period commencing on June 1st, 2021. I don't know if I read this part. In witness thereof, I have hereto set my hand officially and caused to be affixed the seal of the Village of River Forest this 24th day of May 2021.
Very good. I'll ask the if there's any questions or comments on the resolution. Otherwise, I would ask the clerk to take the vote.
Kit, if I may, I have a comment. Going along with Lisa's little piece of history, I have something to say about LGBT Pride Month is in part to commemorate the Stonewall Uprising, which occurred at the end of June 1969. The Stonewall Uprising was a series of spontaneous demonstrations by members of the LGBT community in response to a police raid that began in the early morning hours at the Stonewall Inn in Greenwich Village. Patrons of the Stonewall and neighbors fought back when the police became violent. 2 years ago, on the 50th anniversary of the Stonewall Uprising, the NYPD commissioner apologized for the police actions at Stonewall as discriminatory and oppressive. The courage and defiance of the Stonewall demonstrators caused societal and legal changes and established gay rights in New York City and all over the country. In turn, this has sparked bravery in people who identify as LGBTQ+ and their allies. We know that we have many leaders in science, medicine, law, sports, education, finance, the arts, and politics who are LGBTQ+. To me, raising the LGBTQ+ flag at Village Hall is about respect and inclusiveness and acknowledgement that our society hasn't always acted in a respectful and inclusive way to those who identify as LGBTQ+. Last week, I received a resident letter expressing negativity on religious grounds for flying the gay pride flag at Village Hall and asking trustees to vote it down. I assume the rest of the village trustees and the village president also received the same letter. believe me, it's not easy to mention this, and it would be easier to simply vote in favor. But I can't in good conscience stay quiet and not say this. Flying the rainbow flag, pride flag, is not a religious statement. It's about individuality and hope for the LGBTQ plus community and its supporters. And it represents a commitment to full equality, freedom, humanity, and love for all people. This is why I support flying the gay or rainbow pride flag at River Forest Village Hall.
Thank you. Thank you. Anybody else want to comment?
I would just like to add that thank you for that history around Stonewall. And we forget that those people, Marsha P. Johnson, Sylvia Rivera, and Storm Delaverry, were Black, brown, trans people. And a lot of times we forget that part of it as well. Visibility matters, representation matters, and being able to show support for the LGBTQ community is so important. For decades, as someone who identifies as bisexual, I was not comfortable sharing that with people, and only recently began to say it in public, so friends and family knew. And my child, who's given me the permission to say this today, identifies as non-binary, and it was their courage to speak out for the rights of the LGBTQ plus community that gave me courage. And hopefully many children will see that our community is loving of them, and that even though, despite the fact they may not have families who support them or support them yet, that they are loved and accepted.
Thank you. Okay, thanks. Any other comments? Hearing none, we'll go ahead and take the vote, please.
Okay. Trustee Gillis?
Yes.
Trustee Vasquez?
Yes.
Trustee Brennan?
Yes.
Trustee Johnson?
Yes.
Trustee O'Connell?
Yes.
Okay, very congratulations.
And Trustee Bachman?
Yes.
Well, I thought you were called first. Very good. Well, congratulations, and we did it. Okay, so let's go ahead on to the consent agenda. If I can get a motion to move A through G.
I'd like to make a motion to approve consent agenda items A, C, D, E, F, and G.
Second.
Okay. I only, if anybody has comments or questions regarding the consent agenda? I just have one on the village meetings. I don't want anything changed at this point, but I know, John, you're taking over the minutes, and I appreciate that, and I think the staff appreciates that, so thank you so much. You know, in the past, the clerk didn't do the minutes. The staff did,
what?
So, John. Yeah, so, yeah, I hate to tell you that, but, yeah.
That's okay. It's not the first time.
But we appreciate all that you do.
I thought it would be a great learning experience,
right.
So I thought I'd do it.
Well, thank you. I just wanted to acknowledge that. Now, there's a couple of things that I would have done differently, but no worries. We'll talk about
it. I'll learn along the way.
But I did want to say thank you. So on the minute. And then we talked about, of course, the Canadian National. I asked you then to please take the vote on the consent agenda. I think we did. I think.
Wait a second.
Yeah, Katie did. I did.
Hey,
yeah.
Sorry. Trustee Vasquez.
Does he have to read each of the items?
Yes, he does. Points? Thank you.
Okay. Just a
gosh,
question.
I'm so glad Brez is here. Yes.
Hey.
Yes.
We all are. Learning on the job.
Yeah, so John, I often forget that. So
Lisa, you'll love it. Don't worry.
So once we have any, you know, minor discussion around the consent agenda, then you read
each of the items.
Each of the items into the minutes so that
And then call them.
That the, yeah, that the audience knows what we're
voting on. Okay, consent agenda A, Special Village Board of Trustees meeting minutes, May 10th, 2021. B, Village Board of Trustees meeting minutes, May 10th, 2021.
B is not being voted on at this
time.
I'm
sorry. We also skipped what else?
Bob did.
Okay. C, right-of-way encroachment waiver and agreement for an irrigation system located at 1436 Bonnie Bray. D, Surface Transportation Board review of the proposed merger of the Canadian National Railway and the Kansas City Southern Railway resolution. E, monthly department reports. F, performance measurement report. And G, village administrator's report.
Very good. Thanks.
Trustee Vasquez?
Yes.
Trustee Brennan?
Yes.
Trustee Johnson?
Yes.
Trustee O'Connell?
Yes.
Trustee Bachner?
Yeah.
And Trustee Gillis?
Yes.
Okay. I'm sorry, Bob. I didn't hear you pull it. Oh, boy. I'm losing it. Okay. So then if I can have a motion and a second on B, five.
Make a motion to approve consent agenda item B.
Second.
This is a small point department. In the minutes, there was a reference when we were honoring former clerk Dwight that I convinced her to run when in fact the president did. To reflect that. I don't want Kent Lee's kids coming after me.
Right. She already served. No worries.
So,
okay.
So
okay. No worries. Yep.
I'm giving this.
Yeah. And the only thing I would add, I mean, since these are the minutes, I think, of May 10th is, you know, for the most part, my speech was a lot about, you know, the type of the agenda that we will look at in the future. So although that didn't get captured in the minutes, it's certainly in the audio, and that's all, that's good. But so we don't have to change anything. It's just I might have liked it a little bit longer in terms of, you know, capturing some of the things I said, but no worries. It was in the audio, and I think many people listened. So, yeah, thanks, John. But I do appreciate what you're showing. Okay, so with that, if I can get a vote on, if you can read it and then go, please. Read B.
B, Village Board of Trustees meeting minutes, May 10th, 2021.
Okay.
Trustee Brennan.
Yes.
Trustee Johnson.
Yes.
Trustee O'Connell.
Yes.
Trustee Bachner.
Yes.
Trustee Gillis.
Yes.
Trustee Vasquez.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. Okay, there is no consent items for separate consideration, so we'll go on to the recommendations of boards and commissions. And we have the Zoning Board of Appeals.
I'll move to approve an ordinance granting the requested variations at 1018 Park Avenue.
Second.
Okay. So we'll let staff, and then I know we've got the residents here, so we'll let have staff kind of walk the trustees through and ask you to come and speak. Okay.
Sure. So tonight you have on the agenda a recommendation from the Zoning Board of Appeals regarding a requested variation at 1018 Park Avenue. The property owner, George Pavlos, and his architect, Greg and his architect, Mr. Haig, here tonight in the event that you have any questions. So the Pavlos family appeared before the Zoning Board of Appeals in February regarding their requested variation, and after a public hearing was held, the Zoning Board voted 3-2 in favor of approving the recommended variation. Although that was a simple majority that approved or recommended to approve the variation, it requires 4 affirmative votes from the Zoning Board of Appeals in order to receive a favorable recommendation. So that is why the recommendation that is before you tonight was actually a recommendation not to approve the requested variation. So as a result of that, 4 trustees must vote in favor of approving the requested variation in order for it to be granted, and the village president cannot vote on this matter. So procedurally, that is where you are at. In terms of the requested variation, there were, I know, a number of materials in your packet. I apologize if some of them were left out of the version, but they were the findings of fact, the minutes, and the ordinance, all of which just memorialize what happened at the zoning board meeting. There is nothing in those materials that is materially new to the application. So procedurally, and because it was listed on the agenda, there are there's nothing prohibiting the village board from voting on this matter this evening. Mr. Pavlos had shared some information with the Village Board of Trustees. A copy of that has been printed for you. A copy of the documents that I've just referenced have been printed for you, as well as some information regarding similar variations to side yard setback and combined side yard setback that were referenced in staff's cover memo that was included in the packet. As I mentioned, it was an email that went to you a little bit later in the day, so I have a printed copy for you here. When a zoning variation is before you, it's important to keep in mind that it's perfectly acceptable to look at what has happened at other property owners, and you're certainly not barred in any way from doing that. But every zoning variation application is unique and should be decided based on the merits of its case and the standards that the zoning ordinance lays out for you to consider in determining whether or not this meets a hardship. A hardship is tied to the land. It's not tied to the structure, the user, or the use. And so the property owner attempted to make their case to the Zoning Board of Appeals that a hardship existed, and the Zoning Board voted 3-2 that a hardship existed. But again, procedurally, it's before you as a motion not to approve it because of that vote requirement. So as you, the Village Board, particularly for our newer members, consider whether or not to concur with the official recommendation of the Zoning Board or to disagree with them, I would ask you to keep in mind the compliance or how the application meets the zoning ordinance standards for a definition of hardship. And those standards are laid out for you both in the code, both in the findings of fact, and in the email that I sent to you today. So I am happy to answer any questions that you have. I can give you just a real quick summary here. Homeowners propose to construct an addition onto the property, which includes an attached garage. The requested variations that they're seeking are a variation to the side yard setback and the combined side yard setback. So quite literally how far the structure is from the property line of the home. They are seeking a variation of 1 foot 3 inches to the side yard setback requirements and 5 feet 10 inches to the combined side yard setback on the basis that the rear yard of their home experiences flooding, and it's difficult for them to construct in the rear of the property as opposed to the north and south sides, which are their side yards. So we have the applicant here with us, if you'd like to say anything.
I'll be brief. Nice to meet all of you guys, and thank you for your time and allowing me to introduce myself. My name's Greg Palivos. I'm the homeowner at 1018 Park Avenue, and I moved to River Forest 2 years ago with my wife, Amanda. Amanda, unfortunately, apologizes, but she couldn't make it tonight. She just gave birth to her second son 2 weeks ago, so she's at home with him and an energetic 2-year-old. And even though I only moved here 2 years ago, I'm proud to say that my children are fourth generation River Forest, because Amanda's grandparents have been living in our community since 1964. Her parents, uncles, aunts, all were born and raised here, and they all chose to raise their families here as well. My wife Amanda, along with many of her cousins, they went to Willard, Roosevelt, OPRF, and we look forward to continuing that and sending our children there as well. And we're requesting this variation to the board in order to construct a addition on our home, as well as a 2-car garage. And, you know, with me working remote from home to spend more time with my children, my family, and also with our intentions of God willing, continue to grow our family, we really need the space to make this our forever home. And with that being said, I'm going to turn things over to our architect, John Haig, who's going to go more in depth on our project. He can answer more specific questions as it relates to what we're looking to do. But I just want to say that on behalf of my family, my wife and I, we appreciate your consideration and your time and the service that you all put in to helping our community.
Thank you. Okay. Hi, I'm John Haig, the architect, as Greg said.
I do have a couple extra things, if you don't mind me passing them out. I have seven copies. I don't know if you want to just pass them around. And I'll walk you through our application process, and then hopefully you get a good understanding of what our request is and why we're here tonight. So the address is 1018 Park Avenue, which is located between Augusta and Thomas. Existing is a two-story frame house that was built in 1917. So we're proposing a two-story addition, 24 feet by 27 feet, that has the attached garage on it. And the south side of the property is where this addition is taking place. And additionally, our existing conditions are 27 feet 9 from the south property line. We're asking to reduce this to 3 feet 9, which will allow us to have a 24-foot wide garage. So I'll take you up. I don't know if you have our copy of our things, but I'm just going to briefly just go over all our variances and our responses. I'll abbreviate some and we can get into depth of the others. So number one was the physical surrounding shape or topographical conditions of the specific property involved with bring a specific hardship upon the owner as distinguished from an inconvenience if the strict letter of the regulations were to be carried out. So currently the rear yard retains water after heavy rainfalls, causing flooding in the backyard. So we feel that by adding additional impervious as well as a concrete foundation for the garage in the backyard will only make the flooding worse and could move water over to the neighboring properties during these excessive rainfalls. This would then cause a loss of value and use of the property for the family and potentially neighboring properties, thus a hardship rather than an inconvenience. Number two, the aforesaid unique physical condition did not result from an action of any person having an interest in the property, but was created by natural forces or was the result of governmental action other than the adoption of the zoning ordinance, for which no compensation was paid. The resident and the lot at 1018 Park were built and laid out prior to the purchase from the family. So the existing dimensions of the home and the lot were not created by the current owners. The flooding problems of the rear yard were not created by the family as well and created by natural forces. The family, they were unaware of the issue when they purchased the home, and the land was not compensated in any way for the unique physical condition of the property. Number three, the conditions upon which the petition for variation is based may not be applicable generally to other property within the same zoning classification. So the specific conditions present as well as proposed 1018 Park are not generally applicable to other properties in the same R2 classification. Being the lowest property on the block, the subject property experiences above normal flooding and is unique to this site and does not meet the standard of general applicability. The purpose of the variation is not predominantly upon a desire for economic gain. As Greg said, the family has long-term ties to River Forest with parents and grandparents living in the community for over 40 years. They are raising their family at the residence, and the primary motivation in applying for this variation is the full use and enjoyment of the property and safety of their family opposed to any economic gain. The granting of the variation shall not be detrimental to the public welfare or unduly injurious to the environment, or to the enjoyment, use, or development value of the property or improvements in the neighborhood in which the property is located. So the proposed variation in no way was detrimental to public welfare and is a positive influence on the enjoyment and development values of other properties. The proposed variation would allow the residents to add a garage, which they currently don't have, and in a manner to improve the value of the other homes in the area. The proposed variation will not impair an adequate supply of light or air to any adjacent property or substantially increase the danger of fire or otherwise endanger the public safety or sustainability, diminish or impair property values within a neighborhood. The proposed variation will not impact the supply of light or air to the property to the south. There's no proposed variation to the north. So in terms of fire prevention, if there was, we had talked to the Cliff of the building
official.
about potentially having to do any additional fire rating if that was something that they deemed necessary. Okay, number seven, that the granting of the variation would not unduly tax public utilities or facilities in the area. The proposed variation to add an attached garage in addition to the existing home will have no impact on the public utilities or facilities in the area. Number eight was that there is no means other than to request variation by which the alleged hardship or difficulty can be avoided or remedied to a degree sufficient to permit a reasonable use of the subject property. The reasonable use of the property includes an expectation of the ability to use some of the better features of the lot. In this unique case, the detached garage in the rear third of the lot would cause potential for excessive flooding in the rear yard. And so without this requested variation of the hardship, it would become inevitable. So the other things that are in your document are drawings of the site plan that show the existing garage. And I think there's also a survey, existing square foot plans. There's an existing plan that shows our garage that I'll just briefly, so we put in the cars that they currently drive with the doors that open, and we literally have about an inch to spare based on the proposed. So we didn't just go in excessive, say we need 24 feet. It's based on, you know, the real living conditions and what they're currently driving. There's also just a quick elevation of what potentially it looks like. We sloped the roof on the south side to, you know, potentially allow more light down to the neighbor to the south.
What you're looking at was in our packet?
Yeah. And then there's some existing pictures of the house, but I want to show you that on the last page, the last picture, which mine's a little beat up, but it shows the flooding from last May, and you can see how extensive that backyard is. And the things I just passed out to you show the increase in impervious. And there's an existing driveway to the north, and we're proposing it to the south. And the trade-off there is about an 18% increase in impervious, opposed to if we had to potentially put the garage in the back. It's an increase of 67% of the impervious, or 87% of the impervious area. And then the next two document just existing locations of garages in the neighborhood. Obviously, they don't have a garage there today, but you can see by that picture of the flooding that in that aerial picture that they have a large amount of green space, actually, and they're for some reason incorporate a lot of the neighboring water. And the last one just has a kind of a contextual photo montage of what the massing of the house with the addition will be. And I think if you look at it in an overall picture, it's very much in check with the neighboring square footage and the area, and it kind of can relate to a contextual zoning, if you will. And I think it's very much in character with the rest of the neighborhood. And then lastly, we have support from both the neighbors to the south and to the north. If there's anything else you want to add, I'll just open it up to questions.
So the garage itself, the 649 square feet, right? That's a normal garage.
It's a normal garage.
It's 20, not anything abnormal.
It's not.
And, you know, normal.
It's a normal two-car garage.
Right.
I want to share you something.
Is someone on the line?
I'm going to ask the people, Judith, if you could put your if you can put you on mute. I'd appreciate it, Judith.
Okay. First of all, I just want to thank Mr. Greg Palovos for sending us or dropping off the documents he's left us. It was really helpful, so thank you for that. I just wanted to be clear, though, is the issue, and this is how I understand it, so correct me if I'm wrong, the issue really about putting with some of the zoning board members, they said you could comply. By putting, okay, let me finish though. You're ready to respond. So I understand you're ready to comply, but the issue is not building the garage in the back because of the flooding issue and then causing some other flooding issues to the neighbors. Is that what
it's kind of a correct? I think it was brought, there wasn't a whole lot of discussion to be honest about it, but I think we brought up that you could build a one-car garage, you know, in the zoning today by code, in an attached garage, which is not and we talked about like other neighboring buildings and other cases, that it would be this lot is 75 feet wide opposed to the typical R2 is a 70 foot wide lot.
Right.
So it just gets us there, but not quite, you know, but not quite enough. There's always different ways to do it, but really the only way to do it was push this addition further back in the lot, and you have to detach it from the house. And that's where it runs into all the additional impervious issues.
Yeah, and my understanding is the resident needs, you have two cars, right? So you need a two-car garage. Okay. The other question I was going to ask, well, actually, it's not a question for you. I guess I'm going to ask, I'm going to thank the staff here for this sheet, because this is a sheet I really like.
Yeah.
The comparison in terms of the variances, the type of comparisons of the variances that we've granted in the past. So thank you. This is like key to me. The other thing I wanted to ask is when I first read the zoning board's finding of fact, it was hard for me to determine whether the majority voted on the met or not met. So I don't know if when they write, with the follow-up, I do see that there seven were met with 3-2. One was 5-0. So that's great. I'm glad to hear that. But I thought maybe in the future, I thought at one point when the zoning board looked at each standard, they said whether it was met, and then they gave the number of the vote on that issue, as opposed to some said yes, some said no.
They're asked to do that.
Okay. Do we have any influence on giving them a little prompt to say that last? Okay.
And we give them a prompt.
Maybe if you can give them a little nudge next
we'll
time. Because it helps. It helps me, because I'm looking at trying to understand.
Said yes,
and
you said no?
Yeah. According to the minutes, it's like some said yes, some said no. And I'm like, okay, it'd be helpful if they said it was met by a majority of 3-2 or something like that. So I know, so just to make it clear. Just so everybody knows, based on what I've seen and compared, I will be in support of granting the variance. So.
Yeah, I'll just tell you, I mean, it's so funny because I know and I respect everything Lisa says, and I often always agree with her. And I do think she's right about saying, variances stand on their own. However, we do have a slew of variances that happen in River Forest, and I did ask for this page because this makes me a little bit saner, just to try to see, what we did and where and why we did it. So I'm glad you like it.
I also want to add that I do agree that it's not precedent setting,
right,
but it always helps to have this so that, people will always say, well, you did it before to so-and-so, and then I have no comparison to say whether I did it for the right reasons or for other reasons similar to be consistent. So thank you.
I just wanted to ask, the neighbor to the south is the neighbor who's going to be impacted here. And when I look at this aerial view, which is really very helpful, I see that the neighbor's house is relatively close to the property line. Is that neighbor the relative of the property owners who are asking for this variance?
It is, yes. Anita Grisafi is Greg's wife's grandmother.
Okay, correct. And that's the one, she's the one who gave the okay, and she's the one who's the most impacted.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
There was support on the north as well, but you're right. There's not an impact from an addition on that side.
If I could, John, in the course of this construction, is there any way to remediate some of the backyard flooding in this?
We will, as everything, and I think I was part of the project that made it everybody responsible for the grading plans, part of that is to make sure the grading works better. What they'll have to probably do is try to hold the water at some point, because you can't spill it out. It seems like, from what we've looked at, it seems like there's a lot coming in. And if you look at that aerial, you can see there's a garage behind them, and then there's the sport court, and there's, Anita's pool and stuff like that. So they're kind of like picking up all the water. So yeah, we have a civil engineer that we'll be working with to try to mitigate or at least control it.
At least keep it at the same level. I mean,
right.
Again, the neighbor to the west would be, that would be the question that I would ask.
Correct.
So,
Right, and that's just standard practice to keep it all, you know, maintained, or at least the levels as we can current to the surrounding properties.
Good. So, John, you're not going to come back and say, oh, our backyard floods, right?
No.
No. Okay, good.
Hope not.
That has happened.
Yeah.
Good. I mean, any other questions?
I guess I'll just make a comment now that's going to explain my vote. I'm struggling between a tension between a hardship and an inconvenience on this one. The hardship is tied to the land, not to the size of the cars of the applicants. And when I look at all eight of the standards that must be met to show that that a hardship exists, it's hard for me to see that for number five, this proposed project would not impact the value of the property to the south, even though that property owner is saying she's okay with it, and that it wouldn't, and also to number six, that it would not impair or impact the light and air of the property to the south for that building that's very close to the property line as well. It's hard for me to see that's met.
But the, go ahead.
Yeah,
go ahead.
Sorry, if I could respond. So just on the light and air, you know, everything's coming from that south side. So really the light and the would be impacted more on the north side because the light, you know, sunlight. It's not coming the other way that the window's up there. And I don't know what the use of the rooms are up there, but it is, there are some high windows that are part of that neighboring house that don't get affected. And you know, our software kind of allows us to do sun studies on that. And there's no shadows cast that way that would determine that. On your other one, the economic gain, do you mean that in a way that it would increase the value of the house if it was detached or?
I guess number five, and I guess the way I'm looking at that is it's clearly the current owner to the south doesn't have a problem. But would that be a detriment to any other owner if it wasn't?
Well,
that
I think that,
owner?
I see what you're saying. Yeah. But it is a little bit of a two-way street there because her property is past, you know, if there was a setback deemed on her property today, it'd probably be over. I don't know what that number is. So I see where you're saying because it does look like the conflict of it, but there's also not the house opens up to the back to the pool opposed to opening up to Greg's property to mm-hmm. the north, you know, just in a like if you look at it from a design, the windows and all that stuff, there's not a big expanse of windows looking at his property. They're all towards the Augusta or the south.
Yeah. It almost looks like it's back a little bit from the house,
right?
From
it is.
No, yeah.
I have a quick question.
I'm sorry.
Hang on.
I was going to say that for Trustee Brennan, I thought the same thing originally. But then when I saw the letters from the neighbors, and also I didn't see anything in the record, though, that would reflect that the property values were going to go down or be impacted. And then I thought even with the rain in the back, if they were to build in the backyard, then it probably would negatively affect probably not only maybe even this home, but the neighbors next to them. And I think that would impact more of their properties negatively than letting this. So, and then I thought in the future, if the neighbors ever sell, their people coming in will need to make that decision whether, you know, they're going to see what's there already. So if they don't like it, it's too close, I guess they can make that decision. So that's how I sort of balanced it.
John?
Quick question. Did you consider a tandem garage?
We talked about it. I mean, I don't know if you want to respond to it, but it's very hard unless you had a, you know, we talked about trying to do like a circle driveway or different things to go around, and all of a sudden you end up with this kind of crazy plan with driveways on both. You know, we thought, well, maybe you do a, originally we were just trying to guess where the garage was on this house, and it looks like maybe it was in the back portion where the driver was today, but
it just doesn't, it's kind of an impractical solution with, you know, with the property. And what we're trying to do is maintain that backyard. You know, that would obviously push that section back another 20, you know, a car length, 20 feet. So then you have a 42-foot long, you know, deep structure back there, which still starts to get back in that section. So, but we did, we looked at a lot of different options, to be honest with you. It wasn't just like, hey, let's throw it out here and head to the village, because I've worked in the village for a long time. And, you know, this is only the second time on any of my projects I've been in front of you for a variation.
Can okay. we ask you to come to the microphone?
So, yeah. So we can all hear you.
I just wanted to add one more comment in response to Trustee Brennan's concern. My wife's grandfather built that house 50 years ago before he passed away at the age of 53. My grandmother, it's my wife's grandma, but she's my grandmother as well. She's 84 years old. She has four daughters, 16 cousins, and that house will remain in the family for a very long time. So, you know.
Thank you. Any other?
I've got one other question. I listened to the audio of the ZBA meeting, and there was a question that was asked about, you know, what's the plan for the driveway, the current driveway that's on the north of the house? And the response was sort of unclear. It was like, well, we haven't compared, you know, we don't really have a plan, and we haven't compared square foot for square foot what to do. But then on this new document that you've given us tonight, it shows that it marks that driveway as driveway for removal.
Correct.
Can you explain the plan there?
Yeah, so we will get rid of it. I think that was part of the disconnect with our zoning. We just, there wasn't a lot of dialogue back and forth, and unfortunately, I think that was part of it. But, you know, one of the reasons. But, yeah, that'll go away. And that's what I was trying to explain, we're trying to keep it pretty close to that number of impervious. And so it's only an increase of a couple hundred square feet with this proposed driveway.
So I think what you're saying is that the current impervious area in red there is going to now become pervious.
Correct. So there's a plan. So there is a plan that shows this is the proposed. So there's no driveway on the north side. There's a small there's a patio that was back here that'll get taken over by the, you know, the addition.
Did the ZBA see that driveway was for removal? Did they see?
Yeah. It was this was the same plan that they had. Mm-hmm. I think maybe, I don't know if I remember the question, but was it impervious or pavers on the proposed driveway? Because we were always going to get rid of the driveway to the north.
Oh, you're asking me.
I'm asking. Yeah, I don't. Yeah, I was. Just, yeah. I don't remember because I know we never showed the existing driveway being there. It was always going to come out. So I was just trying to rethink of the conversation, and maybe it was a question of what the material was on the proposed driveway.
Okay, could be.
Yeah.
All I did was listen to the audio.
Okay.
You couldn't, and that's, you know, limited
right.
ability to interpret that. I understood the question to be, you know, what is the plan for the current impervious driveway structure? And it seemed like there was no real plan described in the answer, was how I heard it.
Okay.
Yeah.
That north driveway is going away.
To duplicate yourself, but for the fire hazard potential, what are the solutions there?
So in another instance where we had an existing setback, a different house, different thing, Cliff and I came up with, typically you don't have to fire rate the soffits or the overhangs, but if they fall within that setback, which is a 3-foot setback, we just do a fire rated enclosure. So it's a 1-hour condition opposed to a, you know, a non-rated condition. So that's what I was bringing up. If requested, we would provide a fire barrier within that south wall of the addition. Not, it typically wouldn't run around the whole addition, but it would be that south wall that impacts the setback. So, you know, obviously just to prevent fire from jumping if there was,
in that case.
So in any structure, and John, you're the architect, so you'll correct me if I'm wrong, but in any structure, when he's talking about a one-hour rating, what he's talking about is the amount, and Kurt, you can correct me if I'm wrong, too. I'm the fire expert in the room here. Basically, the idea here is the materials that are installed are all about, number one, stopping the fire from communicating from one structure to another. But in the event that it does, it's all about buying time until emergency responders can get there. So a one-hour rating talks about how long that material will withstand certain amounts of heat and fire before it becomes combustible.
And for a one-hour rating, is that standard? Is that what you would want, or?
Well, I mean, there's different levels. It goes from 1 hour to an hour and a half, 2 hours, 4 hours, depending on what type of material you use. But, yeah, 1 hour should be.
Like, and that's all reviewed. Yeah, that's, yes, certainly, exactly. So within a five-minute response time, we should be okay. But certainly those things are under review during the building permitting process. And so the village's building official compares that against codes and standards to ensure that the proper fire rating is in place for any assembly. And often, too, he'll take into consideration distance from one structure to the next, whether it's on the same property or surrounding property.
And the house to the south is a brick veneered house, which technically has a rating already because of that, but the roof doesn't, and that's what the concern is. So,
thank you.
All right. Unless there's any further questions, like I said, I think this comparison is nice. I know they're not identical, but it does give us a feel for. Mm-hmm. You know, what we've done in the community. And of course, we're always encouraging our residents to, do more with their homes, make it better. So, so anyway, with that, I will ask the clerk to take the vote, please. And remember, we need 4 affirmative votes. I cannot vote, unfortunately, but because of the not getting 4 at the zoning board. So I have to sit this one out.
Okay. Trustee Brennan?
No.
Trustee Johnson?
Yes.
Trustee O'Connell?
Yes.
Trustee Bachner?
Yes.
Trustee Gillis?
Yes.
Trustee Vasquez?
Yes.
All right, so congratulations and good luck to you, and congratulations on your newborn. We wish you well.
Thank you.
All right,
thank appreciate
you.
It. Thanks for your time.
All right, so we'll move on to our next item, which is 7B. This is the appointment of Eric Simon. So if I can get a motion in a second. And, sure. Go ahead.
Sustainability.
Oh, okay. Oh, I was wondering. Thank you.
Okay.
Motion to concur with the recommendation of the village president to appoint Eric Simon to the Sustainability Commission to serve as chairperson for a 4-year term ending April 30th, 2025.
Second.
Okay. Great. All right. Great. Well, thank you. Okay. You know, everyone kind of knows Eric Simon. He's a wonderful guy. He's been really instrumental for all of us during implementation of all of our solar discussions. I think he's been on the commission since you, Katie, right?
He's one of the first originals, yeah.
Right, mm-hmm. Right. So it's awesome. And so we're really happy that he's stepping up to the village, the chair of this commission. One thing we'll get into in June, when we come back June 28th, I've asked, each one of you to take on some work as a, elected official, and we'll go through that in June. But I know Lisa is going to stay involved with the Sustainability Commission, and I say this now because, of course, Eric Simon is, certainly interested in making sure he gets support from the trustees. And I said, of course, you have support. We've got 2 former chairmen here, so
mm-hmm.
Absolutely got support. So with that, I hope... we put Eric in the chairmanship.
Mm-hmm. Trustee Johnson?
Yes.
Trustee O'Connell.
Yes.
Trustee Bachner.
Yes.
Trustee Gillis.
Yes.
Trustee Vasquez.
Yes.
Trustee Brennan.
Yes. And just so you know that when we come back on June 28th, there are some terms that are up and there are some vacancies, and then I will come back with suggestions of who we should fill on those vacancies during that time and reappointments during that time. Okay, so let's move on to unfinished business, which is the update for Lake and Lathrop. So
we have Kyle Haste and Mark McKinney from Sedgwick here with us this evening to provide an update.
Welcome.
Good evening, everybody. My name is Mark McKinney with Sedgwick. Since the last meeting, we've seen some very positive momentum on residential sales and particularly the retail leasing. I think we reported at the last meeting that we had 6 sales with 1 in progress. We were able to close that, not literally close, but complete that sale transaction for the 7th unit. So we have 7th units, also a penthouse unit, which is great. In the grand scheme of things, and so that has gotten completed, and we've seen an uptick in traffic, and probably I'd say 4 good leads that are underway of the sales team. So that's been positive. But as I said, the biggest momentum has really been on the retail side. I think we reported last time we had 2,500 square foot of our 14,000 square foot in negotiation for a LOI. We are now at about 10,000 square feet of square foot of the 14 being negotiated for LOIs or leases. That includes 3 hospitality / restaurant type users and 4 what they call medtail or medical use retail. So very positive on that front. So that has really seen an uptick, which we're really happy about, and again, the residential traffic has continued to be strong. The update on the permit, I believe everything we outlined at the last meeting, we're generally in, making the progress we had advised. The MWRD, which is a water management permit, we expect to get that finalized by next week. Had 1 or 2 more steps to review to finalize from the last meeting and a final payment, and that has been submitted. So we're hoping to get that green light or approval next week. Site utilities, I think we had anticipated that being done end of last week, but actually got done today. I think they removed the last pole today. Comcast had been done, maybe if it wasn't at the last meeting, it had been done previously, but AT&T had gotten their last pole removed today, which was great. We had one last open permit review comment that we finalized and addressed, and we're still in the process of submitting those fire suppression drawings. Mm-hmm. We think that may be just has been slowed down with the busy subcontracting world, but we anticipate getting that probably next week. So between end of this week and next week, we're looking to tie up these loose ends and finalize those things. So we're still on for mobilizing for excavation in early June. Can't say an exact date. Again, it's a busy subcontractor world out there, but we are looking to finalize that and start mobilization as quickly as we can, and we'll certainly keep the village informed as we know more specifics. But all very positive and productive activity since our last meeting.
So, Mark, Phyllis had a couple of questions that maybe we can go back to them if you can answer. I think we've answered them in the past, and maybe
I've jotted a couple of them
down. Okay.
I might need a couple of reminders on something. I wasn't quite sure about the family person.
Oh, I think I couldn't hear either, but it says you said no immediate. Is there any distant family? So I don't know.
Well, I wasn't sure if it was family, period, or just families from River Forest, but our understanding, we actually touched base with the sales team while we were waiting to come up. They're telling us from between Oak Park and River Forest, 6 of our 7 sales are from.
She's asking the question of a member of the developer's family.
Oh.
Yeah.
There was interest in a member of the developer's family, but they're no longer part of that.
Okay. So all 7 are not members.
Right.
Okay. Thank you. So what else?
One of them was about the vent system.
Yeah, the vent system.
So, we did talk about that last time. Again, the site has been remediated through a state managed, overseen process through a separate engineer, Pioneer Engineering. We've shared the report with the village. So they have managed and treated the soil to meet an acceptable level of, you know, no one wants to necessarily acknowledge any kind of contamination, but look, all, you know, all soil has some level of, you know, contaminants or whatever within it. So it's been managed and treated to where it has the appropriate or satisfactory level of that the state will allow. But even with that, with a site on top, vapors can still move and migrate on the site. So to complete the process, to get what's called a no further remediation letter at the end of the day, she referred to the barrier. In some cases, the barrier can simply be the concrete that we put on the building to contain the site. So essentially, that's the primary part of the barrier. But in certain areas, we will put a plastic barrier to supplement that concrete, as well as a venting system. So it'll be a series of PVC pipes set out on a grid that allow anything that could come out of that soil to vent up 50 feet up in the air, you know, out through the top of the building. So, and then out. So it's not like it's being vented right into somebody's yard or property or anything. It's vented up through the building.
So this is normal, reasonable. I mean, this is like normal ways to vent. You know, if this was sitting somewhere in Chicago,
yes,
the process would be identical.
We're not creating the
right
system. We've done it before. We've done two other gas station projects. Both required the venting system.
Right.
It's a normal NFR requirement to comply.
And in fact, they approve your plan.
They will, yes, exactly. And the engineer oversees, you know, they will.
So this isn't your plan. It's plan
right, and it'll be, and it'll be engineered by a separate engineer. I don't know that our environmental engineer would do that engineering, but it'll be a system engineered by a professional engineer and implemented and overseen by Pioneer in the installation.
I believe she asked a question about construction start time.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, yeah,
Lisa.
So that's a condition of approval on any construction permit. And so our construction hours are on there. So to answer the question, anyone who gets a permit through the Village of River Forest is required to comply with the construction hours. They will be too if there are any exceptions to that granted. It's really for the most extreme types of situations where maybe, you know, like Concordia University was bringing in these very large precast panels and just we needed to work with them a little bit, but in a situation like this, no, I mean, they're expected, and Mark and the team will know what the construction hours are. Anybody who is working, any contractor that is working outside of the hours, let the building department know. You can call the police department if there's not, you know, an emergency going on. They can come out and ask those contractors to pack up and go home for the night or wait until the appropriate time to start their work. So they will be required, just like every contractor, to comply with the construction hours. Yes. Yep. 7 a.m. start. Yeah.
We got to find out who's doing what. It's
early. Yeah, exactly. So the other thing, too, I would note is when permit applications come in for approval, they're required to identify all their general and subcontractors. And so we have contact information. And if we get complaints, and this goes, again, for any contractor, we can reach out to them and make sure that they are compliant with our regulations. And if they're not compliant, they get a ticket.
I have a question, a couple questions.
Sure. Go ahead,
so when the last month when you guys were here and gave us an update, it was 6 residential sold, 1 waiting attorney approval, and you got that attorney approval, so now we have 7 residential sold. And I think that you also told us, or someone else told us, that you needed to have 9 sold or 40% of the residential square footage in order to get to secure financing.
It's a combination of both retail and residential. So we were just purely looking at the residential. We would have needed 9 and 10. At that time, we had some retail. So I think the 9 was based on having some level of retail. The bank looks at it holistically with both letters of intent and contracts. So now that there's been so much more momentum on the retail, we can lock some of those LOIs in. It might even relieve some of the pressure on the residential. So it's all a kind of a balance of the two, but it's how the bank looks about this, you know, just the success of the project through a pre-sales process. You know.
Got it. And so we still just have 1 letter of intent on the commercial side, and is that covering more square footage, or is the initial letter of intent still covering the same square footage, but we've got other interested parties?
Square footage on the is it still the total? So the 2,500 sounds like it came together, but again, we have up to 10,000 square feet of interested dialogue going on that we hope to secure into an LOI.
Okay. And then I understand you've got the utilities taken care of as of today. The MWRD permitting you expect by next week?
This week or next, yeah. It's just the process of, you know, getting it moved through the system. You know, the holiday may affect it a little bit, but we're hoping for this week, but it may jump into next week.
Okay. And then the one part I didn't hear
yeah.
was the village permitting is the last thing that you're waiting for also. Is that right? Village permitting?
To start construction, yes, they need the village's permit.
And when is that? What's the timing on that?
Well, the construction permit we would be looking to before the vertical construction, which would be after the excavation. We're working with the village to do a extension of the demolition grading permit for the excavation work, and then for the vertical construction, we will do the get the ultimate building permit. But we're trying to complete all those things. We're not to get it done sooner than later. So everything related to the permit should be complete in the next week.
In the next week.
Right.
Okay.
Which again includes MWRD. Not utilities separate, but it's really MWRD, MWRD, the open mechanical permit, and the fire suppression. Those are the permit-related items that are there. Utilities are just trying to get off-site so we can do the excavation.
Okay. And when did we get the EPA approval of our remediation action plan?
The ultimate approval will come as part of the NFR, as I explained earlier with the vent system. We for the work that's been done on site, we touched base with the engineer within the last week and said, did she have any updates on when we would actually get that letter? It sounds like they're just in administrative sort of delay, but we hope to get that within the next week or two as well. We're hoping to have it by now, but it's just taking longer to get.
I guess I was thinking about the one that allowed us to put remediation complete up. Because those signs went up like...
Yeah, the report that's been done has identified that the work has been done, not the site work has been done. It's just coordination between the engineer and the state just sort of finalizing the paperwork.
So we still don't have it?
The letter, no, we don't have the letter. But it's not impeding any work on site.
I think, just so we can clear, I mean, I think EPA allows it like 90 days for them to give back a letter saying, yes.
Right.
But Katie, they spent, I think, and I'm not trying to put words, but what I read in our website, a lot of iterations with the EPA on the report to get to the final report.
Right.
Of which
they had to go back,
February.
Re-sample some areas, treat some areas. So we're in a T-crossing and I-dotting mode right now with IEPA. But we've been given the approval to proceed with any kind of site activity.
Thanks. And also, we're going down to one meeting a month now. Are you available to continue to come monthly and give us updates at our one meeting?
Well, we were hoping even today we could do it by Zoom. We'll see if Zoom is still an option for next week or next month. But certainly
we'll plan
can
on
see
it.
What progress.
June 28th. Yeah. Get that on your
okay.
calendar.
Okay. I heard it mentioned earlier.
Okay.
It's on our calendar. But yes, I mean, I hope we can probably be here, if not in person, at least by Zoom. But the update, I would imagine, next in just a month, maybe just be progress. Well, probably progress on sales and leasing, but also just progress, which you'll see out your back door on the excavation.
Thanks. I had a question around few retail, I think you said, were they LOI or indications of interest?
Yes. So we typically not selling the retail. We're sort of establishing the retail absorption, if you will, through something called a letter of intent or an LOI, which is just securing their interest in the space, which has substantial meaning to a lender. When you can show them an LOI, it's almost as good as getting a sale of a residential unit.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah. For the three that are hospitality restaurants and the four that are medical uses, are they competing with one another, or are you expecting that there would be three?
We actually had somebody interested in the Westmost space, and that was in the medical retail type, And then we had somebody else come in interested in the westernmost base. And so we worked with the two of them. So I think the newest one actually is the one that went to LOI. And so the one that was previously strongly interested in the west base is bumped over a little bit. We're working with them. So if either to put them in a space that works for them or massage them around as it makes the most sense. So there's probably some level of competition in the mix, but I think we have 14,000 square foot, 10,000 of interest. We should be able to work through it. But so far, we've been able to sort of not lose anybody in the conversation.
Sure.
Even the three hospitality restaurants, the three interested parties, you've been able to work.
Yeah, I don't. I have no probably a little less about those myself, but my sense they're still in the mix, in conversation. So
sounds like they're different.
Right. I know one's a cafe, smaller cafe. One is a very reputable group. Been asked to keep it a little confidential until things get locked in a little bit more. Maybe the report next month will hopefully be able to share some of that information.
Yeah. But in different spaces,
different restaurants.
Thank you.
Right. Any other questions, John? You looking at me?
I'm just getting started on this, so I was just curious. A couple of just top-line numbers. What was the original number of residential units that you had planned?
Original was 32. 30.
And how many commercial units were originally planned?
Commercial has not changed.
Okay.
We had just taken a floor off to basically make the project meet the market as opposed to the market meeting the project. So less units just helped us get to our goals faster.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. So final numbers.
22, yeah. There was an 8-unit floor that we took away. So we have 8, and 6 currently. 8 on 2, 8 on 3, 4, 6 on 4.
All right. So no further questions. Thank you very much, Mark. Thank you, Kyle. Thank you. June 28th. Mark that calendar. All right. Very good. Thank you. I really appreciate it. Okay, so let's move on to new business. So if I can get a motion to approve the creation of a lead service line replacement program.
I'll make a motion to approve the creation of a lead service line replacement program.
Second.
John, just one second before you begin. I got a note that if trustees have questions, if you could try to speak, or if the board, any board member or any member of the public has questions, try to speak as closely to your microphone as you can.
Oh.
Some of our listeners may be having a little hard time hearing everybody.
Thank you. I know I'm having.
Okay. Hello, everyone. Nice to see you in person. So this is a new voluntary resident assistance program that will allow residents to receive reimbursement for the replacement of their lead water service line. We would operate this program in a manner similar to the basement protection program, in that the resident will be able to choose their preferred contractor to have the work performed. The contractor would have to be licensed and bonded with the village and go through the permitting and program application process before any work can begin. And by way of background, just a quick explanation about water service lines. A water service line is a pipe that goes from the village water main to the building. And the pipe has separate ownership. So the portion of the pipe that goes from the water main to the shutoff valve is known as the B-box, is owned by the village. And the portion that goes from the pipe, portion of the pipe that goes from the B-box to the building is owned by the property owner. So the importance of replacing lead water service lines is a priority to the village and is also expected to be a regulatory requirement from the state level in the future. There's currently pending legislation which will require the village to have a complete inventory of all lead water service lines, and we expect to have this information within the next year due to the customer appointments that are needed for the advanced metering infrastructure project. And according to the pending legislation, the village will need to have a plan in place for the replacement of all lead service lines in the village by April 2027. We will then have 14 years after that to ensure all lead lines are replaced. And there may be grants available, made available by the state for these replacements in the future as well. Our current practice for the replacement of lead service lines is to use a contractor to replace the village-owned portion of the service whenever a resident has chosen to replace their portion of their water service. So we coordinate that planned work with the property owner and pay for the replacement of our portion, and the property owner pays for the replacement of their portion. Now, this lead service line replacement program will provide an incentive for residents to replace their service line at a reduced cost. The program would provide full reimbursement of the village portion up to $5,000, which is the typical cost of replacement of the village portion. However, if this is found to be a higher cost, we would require three estimates to be provided, and we would provide reimbursement to the lowest of the three estimates. The cost of replacement of the property owner's lead water service line will be a 50% match up to a maximum of $2,500. So if a typical replacement of the total line costs $10,000, which is the average right. cost, the village would pay for our portion $5,000 and half of the owner's portion $2,500, which would leave $2,500 or 25% of the total cost paid by the property owner. We think this program provides a helpful financial incentive for anyone considering the replacement of their lead water service line, and it will also put us on the right track to be ahead of future state regulatory requirements and be in compliance in the years to come. And we're seeking the village board's approval of the program. So if there's any questions.
Yeah, John, go ahead.
What did you come up with the $10,000 average cost?
That is a known cost. So what we do currently is we work with a contractor, and that contractor gives us a price, $5,000 for our side, and mm-hmm. what is usually that amount for the property owner's side.
So a property owner, if they chose to change their pipe
right.
to copper last year, they would have spent five?
Right, right. They would have spent the total amount for their own portion, and the village would have spent the total amount for our own portion.
Okay, thanks.
Sure.
Good clarity.
So as a follow-up question, you mentioned the $10,000. Is that an estimate, or is that going to be a fixed cost that everybody can rely on?
That's going to be an estimate.
Okay.
Because every line is a little bit different. So if someone has a long service okay. from one side of the street going across the street all the way to their home, it's going to cost a little bit more. If you have a short service, it's going to cost a little bit less.
Okay.
So that's why we need to, you know, to get estimates from all the contractors for their preferred contractor. Okay.
Yeah. And is there a list of approved contractors that the village will, I guess, accept for reimbursement, or can the residents pick their own?
They can pick their own as long as they're licensed and bonded with
okay.
the village.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I would urge you to look into a couple of companies that are doing kind of a mole technique where they don't dig up the yard. They literally drill from below the street. It's about $2,500.
Okay, sure.
Well, that's significantly less.
Is it a directional drilling or a directional boring installation?
I'm going to try to describe it.
Okay, sorry, I don't mean to put you on the spot. We can always follow up tomorrow and
right.
get a little bit of information
yeah.
from you.
Yeah, I'm happy to pass along the contract.
Yeah, I think
yeah, if you want to pass that along, we're familiar with directional boring companies.
Yeah.
That's how we came up with these costs.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I think this is, you know, one of those things that's really nice to do with and for our residents. As I recall, I don't know off the top of my head, there's a couple other programs where we do reimbursements and contributions. Would it be possible to assemble those? Maybe we put that in a newsletter to just let residents know that these programs are available to them?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
thanks.
Absolutely.
Yeah, flooding one is the big one.
Assuming
yeah.
the board approves this program tonight, we would begin advertising it to the community this week.
Thank you.
And but just a follow-up with Bob, I mean, I think we've got a very good response to the other programs that
mm-hmm.
we do. I mean,
yeah, we sure do.
I'm looking at you, Maggie, because I know many of the folks down on Lake Street use it. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Wonderful. Right.
Yeah. Yeah, we're happy to communicate that information. Thank you.
Do you have any sense about how many homes in River Forest or how many residential spaces are going to eventually need this?
So that's something we are going to find out when we do the complete inventory throughout the next year. Right now, we would just be approximating that. But we do know most of the lines are old. Doesn't mean they're necessarily lead, and we don't know if they've been replaced years ago by copper. So I don't have an exact number on that.
And if it's not copper, it's most likely lead.
It could be lead or it could be HDPE, which is a plastic material. But those are the common. There are some galvanized as well, which is a different material. But the older services, lead was the most common.
Given the amount of rehabilitation work we've had going on around here, the number's got to be, you know, at least we got to be at a good starting point, you know. I would assume when people are remodeling their houses and doing big expansions and things, they're changing that out now. So that could be interesting to find out.
What do you think, John?
Well, the easiest way to figure it out is just take a magnet to your pipe as it comes into the house. If it doesn't stick, it's lead.
All right, you're on there. Signing up for that?
Learn that in sixth grade.
Okay.
All right. We'll find that out. Any other questions? Good questions. Great. Thank you. All right. Hearing none, I'll ask the clerk to please take the vote on this.
Trustee O'Connell?
Yes.
Trustee Bachner?
Yes.
Trustee Gillis?
Yes.
Trustee Vasquez?
Yes.
Trustee Brennan?
Yes.
Trustee Johnson.
Yes.
Good. Very good. I'm sure our residents will. Thank you. All right. So that concludes our regular. So we'll need to adjourn to executive session.
Make a motion to enter into executive session to discuss a litigation involving the village that is pending.
Second.
Okay. So because we have all of the trustees here, we will not be once we adjourn into executive session, we will be closing out our Zoom and YouTube feed, and we will not be returning to it. You will adjourn outside of Zoom. Yeah, and the board won't be discussing or taking any further action after executive session. So,
in other words, for leave Zoom.
Right.
So, all right.
Do we need a motion to adjourn the meeting then?
Yeah, and a roll call. Oh, I thought we had a motion.
Did you?
Oh, no.
Somebody moved.
The executive session.
So we need a motion to adjourn.
No, just going into executive session.
Okay. Trustee Bachner?
Yes.
Trustee Gillis? Yes. Trustee Vasquez?
Yes.
Trustee Brennan?
Yes.
Trustee Johnson?
Yes.
Trustee O'Connell?
Yes.
President Ducey?
Yep, sure.